Hello and welcome to Taking Care of Business. I'm Jackie Mitchell, and today we talk about a business topic that seems to sit in the realm of big business and appears to be out of reach for small business and not-for-profits. Well, that's the perception anyway. It's using media in your business as a channel to promote your business or brand. Advertising has long been the king of the marketing tactic, but using media and PR can be a very cost-effective promotional tool. As always, we have the best in the business world from a variety of angles to discuss this most often misunderstood topic. We have the business editor from the Herald Sun on the show today, a media guru and educator. We have journalists, we have PR specialists. We have everyone here that is going to be really useful in giving you lots of information about this fascinating topic. You'll certainly enjoy eavesdropping on this conversation today. Now, let's get started. Our first guest is our resident RPFM media guru. She is Australian media executive, broadcaster, journalist, commentator, executive producer, editor, filmmaker, author and educator. And she's now a key part of the RPFM family. Tracy Hutchinson, welcome to Taking Care of Business.
Hi, Jackie Mitchell. It's an honour to be on your show. I feel like I've got huge boots to fill after introducing someone that I'm wondering if they're outside or something.
No. You're being far too humble. It's great to have you here. You are perfectly made for today's topic. Actually, you have a show directly after me. So those that are listening today, keep listening after my show here on Taking Care of Business. Tracy has a show called Wordy Rappy Hood, which is really interesting. You've got some fascinating guests on there. I love it.
It's always great. It's just been a great way to connect with fabulous people on the peninsula doing great things, a whole range of guests. And I think I'm coming up to my 50th show shortly. So it's
already?
Yeah, already.
It goes fast, doesn't
Pretty
it?
Pretty cool.
Now, yeah. There's so many questions to ask, but I was thinking about where do I start with you? And I know that you're, as an educator, just tell us a bit about what you're doing in that area.
Yeah, so I'm head of journalism at the Australian College of Arts, which is a private college. We're a higher ed education provider. And the students that come to us want to be journalists and content makers in everything other than news and current affairs. So, which, interestingly, is the only growth market in the media at the moment.
Really?
News and current affairs is a shrinking pool. Mm. There's increasingly one version of the story that gets picked up by every major news outlet, and it just gets rebroadcast and rebroadcast and rebroadcast. So that's not a growth area. If you're a news and current affairs journalist or an aspiring to be one, it's not a growth area. What is a growth area is that whole world of digital media, online media, social media, and in the lifestyle kind of umbrella, really. So we're talking music, we're talking popular culture, we're talking film, television, food, travel, sport increasingly is sort of finding itself in that kind of storytelling genre. So the interesting thing for me, having worked for 30 years as a journalist in all kinds of genres, like across every genre, from factual right through to high-end, commercial television lifestyle through the Getaway program, is to really actually see how my industry is morphing and changing all the time. And the challenge for me, I guess, now as an educator is also how I... It's sharpened my own practice. It's made me really, really much more engaged with an industry that I'd really started to lose interest in. But because I'm now working in this really dynamic growth area that is trackable through Google Analytics, because most of the traffic's coming online, and that the role of the journalist is changing so much that it's no longer enough just to think, oh, well, I'm going to be a writer, or I just want to be on television doing something. You need to be able to shoot, you need to be able to cut, you need to make the podcast version, you need to make various versions for different platforms in terms of social media, what platform on social you're filing for. You've got to be able to identify when to actually post the piece of content that's your story. And you can track it because whoever owns the website, whether it's the online versions of Fairfax or News Limited, or it's the junkie.coms, or it's Tone Deaf, or it's the vast range of digital platforms that are actually thriving because their sponsors want to be able to track who's coming, when they're coming, how many of them, and it's all possible. Yeah. So my students need to know all that. And I've had to work out how to teach it all to them as head of the course. And so that's been, you know, it's really fascinating. But it's been a very interesting thing for me to reobserve what's actually happening and what being a journalist actually means in 2017.
It's interesting looking at your background in preparation for today, and I noticed one of your career highlights, and this is this hard, this image of this of a journalist, this hard-hitting journalist, was you covering the resumption of nuclear testing at Muroa Atoll and filing under the influence of tear gas and stun grenades from a burning Tahiti airport for SBS TV World News. Oh my God. But that's the perception of that hard-hitting journalist, but you're saying now that's actually, it's changed so much since then.
Well, there's still people doing those jobs. Mm. It's just that, you know, there's six jobs to
that's
do that.
It, yeah.
And the people who've got them aren't going anywhere. Mm. And if you're an aspiring journalist, content maker, writer, whatever it is that you're thinking about doing in this industry, it's not much point really aspiring to, it is if that's absolutely what you want to do, because people are still doing it. People are still out covering wars. They're still out doing the whole thing. I guess my point is that's not actually where the growth industry is, because you can have an Al Jazeera journalist who might be covering Syria. You've got Al Jazeera, BBC, CNN, maybe the ABC. You know, you've got five news outlets, I guess, that are covering, you know, the same version of the story, and it gets rebroadcast billions of times. We've seen that story. We don't need another person here trying to comment on, you know. That's what I mean. They're sort of versions of events, and they're all kind of, you know, got their stakeholders all heavily invested in them. And yes, if you want to go work for CNN or you want to work for the national broadcaster here or BBC or wherever you're aspiring to, aspire away. What I'm saying is the pragmatist in me, someone who has consistently kind of upgraded my skills and morphed as, I mean, content making hasn't actually changed. The role of the journalist hasn't changed that much. It's the platforms that have changed and the need to kind of maintain that dexterity and ability to keep moving. Otherwise, you will get left behind, and no time more clearer than now.
Has the content or the elements of what makes a good story, has that changed?
No. Good storytelling is good storytelling.
What is a good storyteller? Okay. So from a business's perspective, they're wanting to get some media exposure and want to use the media. What sort of story angles or storytelling ideas would be attractive to journalists?
My time in commercial news and current affairs actually really sharpened my focus about what makes a good story in lots of ways, because it is always the story that connects with one person that everyone else can relate to. So the story that we saw coming out of Syria, for example, of the young boy in the back of the ambulance, completely just a photograph that went viral. No context for what that story was, but you could work out what the story was. So the thing that the connector there was that everyone related to, here's the real face of war. Mm. People aren't interested in the politics. They're done with it. What they want to know is, how is it impacting on real life people? So for business or any organisation, trying to work out how to get the cut through in a really noisy environment in terms of the media landscape is, what is it that's actually going to cut through and tell a story that everyone or the key people that you want to bring to your business are going to respond to? So, you know, whatever it is that you're in the business of marketing, and you do it on this show all the time, you know, you have great people coming in identifying their unique selling point and what it is that they bring to the market. So you just have to find the face of it or someone to carry the yarn for you, and that's your story. You know, it's not that complicated. It's just that not many people get it right, because sometimes they actually overthink it, because what it really is about is how do we need to carry this story? What does my product do? You know, what am I trying to actually put into the market? Am I trying to make people's lives better? Okay, how am I trying to make people's lives better? How about we get someone who is telling us how we make our lives? This is advertising. Blur between, you know, and this is the other thing that where journalism is actually why this conversation is so interesting today, because the blurring of the lines between what is journalism and what is product placement journalism and what is spinning journalism. And, you know, there are lots of blurred lines around it. You know, it's not enough anymore for a journalist just to do the one thing. They've got to know, because increasingly, you know, the days of editors sitting around in the morning and thinking, pontificating about what they think their audience actually wants are over, because what's driving editorial now is what's trending on Facebook or Twitter, or what social media is talking about, or what's gone viral. You know, it's completely flipped the idea of what makes a story. But at the heart of it is still, how does it affect me? Yeah. And how am I going to tell that story?
Your story is interesting, and I noticed that you said the word blurred lines. You know where I'm going with this?
Oh, yeah.
That's the name of a song. And it was a song by a band called Silverchair that our friend Tracy here was part discovered them.
Yeah, yeah.
How
one
did
of
that
my
happen?
Many hats. Well, I was producing a music show at SBS called Nomad, and we're going back to sort of 1994 now, and it was a kind of kooky little show. You know, it was a sort of multi, it was ahead of its time, really. It was a sort of, we didn't have a presenter of the show. We had multilingual graphics. So SBS, of course, the multicultural broadcaster, had these crazy multicultural, you know, graphics, and we'd often do things in languages other than English. But I knew that, and we were on air at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night, prime time. And I knew that even with that kind of charter at SBS, they didn't really get what we were doing. They thought it was a bit weird. And, and you know, what do we really want music on television? It doesn't rate, the same old thing. Yeah. And so I thought, okay, you know, I actually came up with an entrepreneurial idea of how I could demonstrate to management that people were, that the show was working. And we were shooting lots of little clips for unsigned bands anyway, and it was that sort of show. And I thought, okay, well, I'll run a national demo competition, and the prize will be a day's recording at Triple J. They'll own the film clip. They'll own the whole thing. And there were a couple of reasons for that. One, I knew that we'd generate, you know, a lot of response to it. Two, I'd been around the music industry a lot, and I'd known a lot of friends that had been really kind of done over by bad record deals and never really owning any of their product and ending up in debt for their creativity. I thought, wouldn't it be incredible if the band actually sits at the table, you know, holding all the cards? And so, long story short, we had about 1,000 entries. And what I was looking for was the perfect multicultural box-ticking band to go into the managing director's office at SBS and say, see, this is, we're absolutely hitting a demographic. You know, we can absolutely, you know, you can hang everything around this because we're absolutely box-ticking this for you. Look at everyone's KPIs looking fabulous. Unfortunately, by far and away, the best application, the best entry came from three white teenagers from Merriweather who sounded a lot like Nirvana. It wasn't the band I was looking for. I tried really hard not to make them the winner because it wasn't going to keep my TV show on air. But in the end, there wasn't any question that they were the best. So they won the inaugural and only Pick Me competition at SBS. And the rest, as they say, is history.
But by
lunchtime the next day, my show had been axed, and they were on their way, and we were out the door.
But what a great story to have on your CV, and maybe you inspired their song Blurred Lines.
I don't know, maybe I did. I mean, the song that won for them was Tomorrow, so that was, you know, the original song that broke them. So yeah, we were part of that incredible story.
We are listening smarter, not harder. Tracy, on the other side of this break, we have some PR experts, and we're going to continue this fascinating discussion looking at a few more angles. Will you stick around for this next bit?
Stick around.
Love to. You're listening to Taking Care of Business only on RPPFM.
You're listening to Jackie Mitchell on RPPFM, Taking Care of Business.
We have an absolutely fabulous show here on Taking Care of Business today. We are talking about using the media in your business. And our next two guests are from the AbFab world. They're AbFab girls. They're from PR. And firstly, we have a PR expert, of course, copywriter, digital content and freelance writer, specialising in not-for-profit sector and coastal startups from Coastal Connections. Andrea Rowe, welcome back.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good to have you here. And our other AbFab girl is our media and marketing go-to girl. So I can call you a girl because you call yourself a go-to girl. Founder of Business, Media Connections and ThoughtSpot PR, Linda Reed-Enova.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Now, how did you, I'll start with you, Andrea, how did you get into PR?
Look, I started out in radio journalism and quickly wandered over into the PR sector, mainly working for government agencies, working firstly in tourism and then government agencies, Steve Brack's office, John Thwaites, a few ministers and media agencies, Commonwealth Games and things like that, and then remained in the PR land because I loved it. I loved that connection.
Interesting, because Tracy was talking about that earlier, about journalists now actually doing more than just journalism and how they actually do now cross over very much into the PR realm. So do you miss the media side of it, the journalistic side of it? Or
I do. I must admit, days like this being in the radio station, I really do miss the radio.
I did notice you were a bit excited.
With radio, of course. So I do miss that. And I still freelance, right? Yeah, so yeah. And file stories for some outlets. So okay. I'm not missing it too much, but I love still lingering.
Okay. There. Now, Linda, your background was a little bit different. How did you get into PR?
I actually landed in PR on my way through university. I was training to be a teacher.
Oh. And how
did I still say I use a degree every day in PR with clients, but I landed up working for a marketing agency and a PR agency, and my boss had turned around and said to me at the 6-week mark, you're never going to teach.
Why?
And he said, "What?" I said, "Why?" He goes, "You're too natural for this." And by the end of 6 months, I was floor managing with 50 staff and doing all of those sorts of things. And I got to the last component of my degree and I went, I looked at my first year salary. I looked at what I was doing and I looked at the teaching and I looked at the education system and said, "Nah, that's it. I'm out." And I stayed.
Interesting. Now, you've
got a couple of... I was 19 when I did that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was only a couple of years ago. Now, I noticed also that you're founder of Business, Business, Business. What's that?
It's a business hub for small business owners to get support and share their business life and business worries and what's going on in business, but be supported throughout the opportunity. What we find in business, being business owners, and Clive and I've got 5 between us, which is scary enough.
Clive's your husband and
yes.
business partner as well?
Yeah. Okay. So we found that there was lots of business groups out there, but there wasn't always that inclusive support of, hey, you've got a question to ask and there is no dumb question, so just ask it.
Is it free to join?
Yep.
Is it on Facebook?
Facebook group called Business, Business, Business. So, it's growing from that.
It's a terrific little forum. It's great.
Good fun.
Mm-hmm. We'll put a link to that. Now, one question I do have for all three of you, because there's 2 journalist background, and Linda, I know that you're actually from the PR, pure PR. Yeah,
pure PR.
And PR, not standing for public relations as well, but also about producing results, because we talked about things being measurable and accountable as well. But one question I thought to myself, when I see people being interviewed, particularly on television or on radio, does the word no comment work? Like, do you ever advise clients to use that? Because you hear that a lot.
Like, we're both shaking our heads.
Everyone's shaking their head. All right, Linda, let's start with you. Why doesn't it work? Look, and what should they use instead?
If you have to use the word no comment or off the record, it doesn't, don't even open your mouth. There is no point. Mm. You can't come back from that.
You're not helping the journalist.
No.
You're not giving them any more information. You're not helping them move on to a new topic. If you really don't know what to say, repeat the line, the same line that you're saying again and again, because at the end of the day, they can only report on that line.
Exactly.
No comment. Really, you're not doing yourself any favours in terms of an ongoing relationship with the media.
Tracy Hutchison, what's your view on the term no comment?
Oh, it's infuriating. and it kind of... You know, it's a dance. You know, there's a bit of theatre that goes on between journalists and talent, as we sort of in the game call, you know, the people who are being interviewed. And the minute someone gives you a no comment, they've lost you, and you've got your back up a bit because, I mean, I think Andrea's absolutely spot on with that. You know, all smart organisations give their key people and their spokespeople media training. If they're not doing it, then they're kind of not thinking. They're not in the real world. And the one thing that you always do in media training is that key messaging. It's key message. What do you want to achieve out of this piece of information going out today? These are the key messages. You just keep going on that. And Andrew's right. If that's all you get, then that's what ends up being printed. There's no kind of waffling around what the actual point is. If you just keep banging that thing coming back. I mean, politicians do it all the time to their detriment. Mm-hmm. And there is a line around that stuff too. If you're a politician, you're infinitely more answerable to the Australian people or people which the journalist is actually asking the question on behalf of, to be answerable and held account. But But if it's around, you know, some sort of issue or something else that's come out and you put someone in front of the camera who isn't ready, and the Dream World thing with Deborah Thomas, you know, I mean, it was fascinating, actually, someone who'd come from a media background who was completely hung out to dry and just was ill-prepared going into... They hadn't worked out what they wanted to say about that issue on that day, and it was really obvious. And so the no comment or not actually giving journalists what they needed just instantly puts people offside.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because in PR, particularly in media, a lot of people or businesses particularly think it's just about getting your business name or your name or your brand name in the newspaper, on the radio, on TV. But the planning side of it, and using Dreamworld as a really good case study, it's about issues and crisis management, and it's about planning for that. So it's about the scenario analysis. Do you do a lot of that, Andrew?
I do a lot of it. My background, of course, working for Steve Brackford's office and John Thwaites' office, was issues and crisis management and media communications. So I was always picking up the phone to John Fain's producers, of course. So I do a lot of that. And as I say to all clients when I take them on board, let's start planning for the worst case scenarios now. What are our actions going to be? What are our responses? Let's just start planning for that, to anticipate that, because at some stage there will be some curly questions coming out.
So do you take the client through a scenario analysis?
And absolutely. I'm working with a carnival operator at the moment, so we've gone through some scenarios recently. I work with the Royal Flying Doctors quite intimately, and we've gone through several scenarios where we look at, okay, what could go wrong here in terms of what are some issues that might be happening in the public eye? How does the organisation respond to this? Let's have a think about some signature statements here that really do reflect the sentiments of the organisation and what we can share with the public. So,
Linda, you're dealing with a variety of businesses, is that right? So
We do small, medium, large. I'd spent my time in the corporate world, but we tend to deal with more small to mediums now. And what my point of view with the no comment thing is, we're talking about relationships. Whether you're doing your own PR or you're a publicist yourself, you're talking about a relationship with a journalist. As soon as you say no comment, as far as I'm concerned, you've just shot yourself in the foot. Your relationship is down. You know, you're not going to move forward. From my point of view, we deal with members who obviously are doing their own PR, and then we deal with clients. And with the client situation, we look at what are the key messages from the very, very start. And sometimes it's that planning and preparation that gets sort of glazed over in this whole free PR world.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you about that, because I notice on your client list you've got a lot of individuals.
Yes.
Now, that takes it to another realm.
Yes,
from a business. So you're working for a business, you've got the business budget, and you're speaking on behalf of a brand. When you're dealing individually, you're speaking on behalf of that person.
Of yourself, yes.
Of yourself. And some people struggle with separating themselves from who they are day to day versus who they are from a brand.
And business life, yes.
As a personal brand.
Look, and I know that struggle. I went through it myself, coming out from the business brand into who I was. But I think there's got to be some clear messages of where I go and where they're prepared to go as small business owners. And my number one advice to anyone is, when you get an opportunity to pitch for a story, an opportunity to respond, would you have done it, and would you have approached the publication, or would you have spoken to the publication if they hadn't approached you? Because if the answer is no, then that's fine. Knock it back. Don't half do a story because you think you have to. Yeah.
Well, it's a matter of really knowing what you stand for, and really feeling positively connected with what you stand for, and really owning that as well, so that you're not feeling conflicted if a media outlet approaches you and it really doesn't match your values.
Exactly.
Linda, would you describe your business as a PR agency?
We're a bit of both. I've got a PR agency, so ThoughtSpot is our PR agency where we work day to day. Media Connections is more making that connection between the small business owners and the journalists, being able to share their own stories and get their own stories out there. So it became the in-between the two realms because PR was one of those things when I came back into it as a small business operator. I still have clients that come and talk to me and go, I really want to do PR, and then they hear the price tag and go, no, I can't. As I'm sure Andrea does too.
We'll actually get back to budgets on the second half of the program, but I just want to follow a train of thought that I've got before it leaves my little brain. Yeah. Tracy's we've got Tracy here. I want to pick your wonderful brain. As a journalist, broadcaster, educator, you would have dealt a lot with PR agencies. What do they do that really annoys you or doesn't work? It's a leading question, I know, and Linda's right
she's,
there, but
she's
I'm
leaning back in her chair.
You know, like what is it they could do better?
Look, I think increasingly the number of people who are working as journalists is shrinking, and so that relationship is in a transition state, I think, because increasingly I think there is an expectation, and I always had this of PR people. The thing that and the comedy festival and the big festivals are really guilty of this. They'll go, hey, great, there's a big festival coming up. You know, we've got more people than we've ever can poke a stick at. You know, 555 million people coming. Great. You know, be great if you could do a story. And they and this, you know, when it used to arrive in hard copy, you know, this wad of a, you know, program would arrive on your desk. And it's like, I haven't got time for that. Yeah. Mm. I would ring up and go, okay, who have you got that is right for my audience and the publication or the television program or the radio program that I'm currently presenting?
Yeah.
And if the thing is, oh, well, we sent you the thing, and I said, yeah, I know you did, and I haven't got time to read it. Mm-hmm. Like, I've got time to get to know your program
to target it.
Yeah, because and I find that really offensive.
Yes.
If someone would contact me, not know the program, spell my name incorrectly, you know, all of that sort of thing, not actually afford me the really basic professional courtesy, me and the outlet that I'm working for, and understanding what the audience is and which client that you're representing is actually going to have the best chance of some cut through and actually getting some traction from appearing on that program, then sorry, this is a really short phone call in the days where you used to take them.
Yeah.
But delete email.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of email traffic that I know that journalists just go with their finger on the delete button and just go, cleared the inbox. Right, what do we got?
Yeah.
What's actually come to me that I can actually make a story out of tailored to what I'm actually trying to do?
Tailored and targeted. Tracy Hutchison, I know you've got to unfortunately leave us now because you've got to prepare for your wonderful show, Wordy Wrapping Hood. So stay tuned out of PFM from 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock. Thank you so much for being on the show. I loved it.
Great talking.
Not only their media guru, discovered Silverchair.
Oh, yeah.
And those, just a little bit of, not a little bit of trivia. Those that, do you watch Offspring?
Yes.
Offspring fan? Mm-hmm. Well, Tracy was the marriage celebrant that married Clegg and Cherie.
That was me.
Oh, that was you, Tracy.
She's a civil celebrant as well.
I am. Now, thank you. I'm having cards given to me.
There we are. Exciting, isn't it?
Love a bit of Clegg action.
Yeah, we love it. I know that everyone's enjoying eavesdropping on our interesting conversation today as we talk about using media in the business. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Jackie Mitchell on RPPFM, taking care of business.
Welcome back to Taking Care of Business as we talk today about how to use the media more effectively to help promote your business. And delivering Victoria's best, most insightful and most engaging business coverage is the Herald Sun, and we have the business editor of the Herald Sun, Peter Taylor. Welcome to Taking Care of Business.
Thank you, Jackie. Nice to be here.
Good to have you here. Now, let's get straight down to business. What makes a good business story?
Well, look, clearly the criteria that I apply to a good business story is going to be different to the criteria that leading newspapers will apply to a good story, or for that matter, the Wall Street Journal or something. So in terms of what appeals to me, from the Herald Sun perspective, we focus our business section very much on listed Australian companies, the companies that you are most likely to be invested in, the Australian economy, jobs, interest rates, and also Victorian business. And we do skew towards bigger businesses because they're the businesses that you're more inclined to be dealing with on a day-to-day basis, and they employ more people and they're significant to the economy. But, of course, in aggregate, small businesses are very, very significant.
Mm.
You know, we have a weekly business section looking at small businesses, and every other day we'll have a story, I would like to think, on a small business with a good story to tell too. So in terms of the SME market, what I look for, or another way of perhaps approaching it is, if you're a small business, how do you know you've got a good story to tell?
Yeah.
The first thing I'd be asking is, you know, what's your point of difference? What differentiates you from really, if you're pitching to the Herald Sun, really from every other business in Victoria? And you know, for want of an analogy, if you're a fish and chip shop based in Mount Eliza, you could be doing very good business, and you could be doing good business because you were the first there, so you have a loyal customer base. could be because you keep your costs down, so your prices are cheap. It could be because you're the only fish and chip shop there. So I'm probably not going to be particularly interested in that business. Mm. There's a thousand others like you in Victoria. If, on the other hand, all your fish is line caught in the Bass Strait, and your batter, you know, the flour in your batter is hand-milled and it comes from the Wimmera, and your eggs from your free-range farm, Gippsland, mm. then maybe we've got a story, because you've got a real point of difference.
Okay, yeah, that's a wonderful analogy, because when you're dealing with big business, I'd imagine most of them would have publicists and PR agencies and in-house media and PR managers, where the small business world doesn't have that level, I suppose, of professionalism. A lot mm-hmm. of them are doing it themselves. Mm. So I was going to ask you, you know, how would they get your attention? But do media releases still work? Is that the best way to sell a story idea to you?
Look, the issue you've got, if you, and particularly if you're using email and you send an email and send it out, you know, to all the journalist email addresses you can find, the issue is we're inundated with press releases, particularly the email system. So I get hundreds every day, as to everyone in the Business Daily team here at the Herald Sun. It is hard to stand out from that fact. So it does work, but you've got to think very carefully about how you construct the email. Your subject line, you should be certainly from where, you know, as much as we're a very big metropolitan paper, we are a local paper. We're a Melbourne Victorian paper. So you should be using your subject line to emphasise that you're a Melbourne or a Victorian business, and to really kind of use the few words you've got in that subject line to hone in on the point of difference. One other thing I look for, you know, if you've managed to capture my attention in the subject line, one thing I'll frequently do is scroll down to the bottom of the email immediately. I look for a Victorian landline number. Now, it's unfortunate, I know, for a lot of people, because so many people use mobiles entirely for their business now. But it's one very quick test I can do to say, well, is this business likely to be based in Victoria? So consider that. You know, if you've got that as an option, use that. Any other number of tips I could give you too, Jackie. I could talk about this sort of thing all day.
Oh, I love it. That's a wonderful tip. And I think the focusing on the subject line is really important, because I think, you know, we're taught at school when we write to, you know, start with an introduction and then the body of it, then you get to the gist of what you're trying to say in the conclusion. Mm. But when you're trying to write a media release or attracting the attention of media, we're talking about seconds to get your attention. So putting the actual point right at the top of what you're trying to say. But what are some of the best subject lines that you just get in an email or a media release and you go, oh, God, that just has got me. It's hooked. I'm hooked and I need to read further.
Well, look, as I say, it's use that, those few words you've got, to emphasise the fact that you are locally based. Mm. If there really is a point of difference, as I say, if you say Melbourne, another good example, if you're a clothing shop. Now, the Aussie clothing industry has by and large disappeared over the past 20, 30 years. We all know that we import most of our clothing from China. If you're a clothing shop and somehow you've managed to, you swear that you only sell clothing that's made in Victoria or made in Australia, then, again, you've got a point of difference. So if you can say, if I see a subject line, you know, new Melbourne-based clothing shop to only sell Australian clothing, you've got my attention.
Yeah.
So again, you're bucking a trend. You have a point of difference. And also consider, is there something particularly topical about your business? So if you're a Frankston nuts and bolts company that has thrived for the past half century on supplying Holden and Toyota, you know, if you might be a dying business in some ways as those companies move out, we're still very interested, because that opens a window to that sector. But perhaps you've also managed to secure a new deal supplying a wind farm in Colac, a nuts and bolts wind farm in Colac. So think about that, the topicality. Is there something in the current dialogue in news? Is there a news theme at a state level or a national level or an international level that you can tap into and that you can also succinctly put in your subject line to draw our attention?
When they send you the media release, is it appropriate for them to call as a follow-up, or is that bugging you and going to annoy you and put you off?
Look, I think the thing I'd say about that is it's very important you do your homework first. So research the publication before you make a pitch to us. Now, if you're going to make a pitch to the Herald Sun, I'd be encouraging. Look, I'd obviously say I would hope a Melbourne business growing in Melbourne gets the Herald Sun every day, so they're kind of tapped in to what's happening in the news cycle anyway. But if you're going to make a pitch to us, you know, buy the paper for a few weeks and look every day at the sections that we have. Look at the names that are writing stories. you will get a pretty good idea of the sort of content we're interested in, and perhaps more importantly, the people that you're perhaps best to make that pitch to. If you've got a good story, the targeted story, we don't mind a call, of course, we welcome it. We want good news stories. I'd encourage you to call, but be a bit discerning in your timing. As much as the 24-hour newsroom in this day and age of the internet, we still do have a crunch time from 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock when we're madly getting the next day's newspaper ready. So if you call, then it's probably going to be a pretty short conversation. On the other hand, if you call sort of late morning when the day's still kind of coming together, there's a good chance you'll get to speak to someone then. So just be a little bit discerning.
That's a good tip.
But there's nothing wrong with a call. We welcome it. Do understand we're doing more than ever with fewer resources than all media companies are in this day and age. So there's no guarantee you'll get a good conversation with anyone. But by all means, try your luck. Important to have a thick skin for that very reason. You may be it's difficult to cut through, and you may be speaking with someone who doesn't have a lot of time. But by all means, try. It's just helpful if you can be confident you've got something that really is different.
So let's go down the path of a small business has done the media release. They've got a really awesome, sexy subject line. They've got your attention. They've done the follow-up call. They've called you mid-morning, so it's a good time. Everything's going well. So the actual story gets some legs. It gets up. It gets printed. Now, the business owner feels that they've been inaccurately reported. What should they do about that?
First port of call is speak to the journalist. Look, I would certainly hope in the case of, it's very important for small businesses not to be afraid of the media. Sometimes we're sort of saying it's this big bogey that's about to get people. It's simply not the case. When it comes to small businesses, look, unless you're using slave labour to import toxic toys from China, we're not out to get you. Yeah, we're on your side. We want to tell good stories about good businesses, good Victorian businesses. So don't be afraid. And it's also very important that in the course of talking to the journalist at the outset, be very transparent. Be absolutely open with them. They may want to know about your revenue situation, your profit situation. If there's something sensitive, discuss it with them. But just say, "But look, I'd prefer this not to be published, and here's why. You know, that this you asked about how I got the money to set up this business. Well, it was a gift from my grandmother, but she didn't give the same amount of money to my cousin. I don't want to wreck the family. So journalists will be very sensitive. They'll be mindful of your concerns, and they'll write around that. In the event that you feel you've been misrepresented, talk to the journalist first and foremost. We of course do apologies if we've seriously erred. There's also potentially the opportunity to do another story that looks at a different aspect of your business and hopefully sort of sets the record straight. If after talking to the journalist you still feel aggrieved, there's other channels. You can come to me as an editor. You can come to the newspaper editor. There's an industry body you can talk to too. But the journalist is your first port of call. I would hope that is the exception to the rule, obviously, Jackie.
Yeah. Now, Peter, as editor, you're the end of the line as far as choosing what goes in the paper. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
So
certainly in the context of the business section, yes.
Right. Okay. So it is quite subjective. Would that be reasonable to say?
Look, it is absolutely. But again, as I alluded to it at the start, we have pretty clear guidelines as to what makes a good business story for us. It is the company you're going to be invested in. It is the company that is the Australian economy. It is the company that employs lots of people locally, and the company that has a really interesting story to tell. Now, that said, you're spot on, Jackie. I mean, for every 100 stories on small businesses in Victoria, good stories that I would like to tell, we are limited in our resources. We're limited in the space we've got. So naturally, it's going to be a little bit of a lottery. Unfortunately, not every story I'd like to tell gets in. And I suppose in that regard, my advice is be persistent without bugging us. If you're emailing us every week, we're probably pretty quickly going to just start deleting your emails as they come in. Yeah. But if you've got a good story to tell and you don't get through this time, come back in 6 months and try again in another 6 months.
Wonderful. That's a nice way to finish. Peter Taylor, business editor of the Herald Sun. Buy the paper, those that are listening in business. The Herald Sun has a wonderful business section. Peter, I read it regularly. I think it's a really useful resource. But I would say I do like to hear those small business stories, and I'd like to see a bit more.
we'll certainly keep that in mind. One thing I will point with your listeners to is we have the first Thursday of every month, we have a series called The Pitch. We focus on an entrepreneur for a really creative idea. We have three panelists to look at that idea and give their verdict on what can be done to improve the business. and what they're doing well. And it's actually those tips apply to many, many, many businesses. So it's actually a really great utility for a lot of entrepreneurs to sort of read and take away some of those ideas and grow their own businesses with it.
Wonderful. We'll put a link to our Facebook page for that because I think that's a wonderful initiative. Peter Taylor, Business Editor of the Herald Sun, thank you so much for your time and being on Taking Care of Business.
It's a pleasure, Jackie. Thank you.
Thank you. We are listening Smarter, Not Harder on Taking Care of Business exclusively here on RPPFM.
You're listening to Jackie Mitchell on RPPFM, Taking Care of Business.
Welcome back to Taking Care of Business. We are talking about communication, which is pretty important as humans roaming this earth. In business, we are dealing face-to-face with people, and communication is always key, and a key part of communication in promoting your business. And an area that I think is underutilised is the use of the media. I'm joined here by Andrea Rowe from Your Coastal Connections and Linda Reed Enova. Have I pronounced Enova?
You have got
it. Oh, good. From Media Connections, businesses is business, 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 and ThoughtSpot PR. We just had an interview there with Peter Taylor, who's the business editor of the Herald Sun, which was great. He's very generous with his time, but also gave some awesome tips.
Mm. Indeed.
Terrific tips.
Really good tips. And I think the call mid-morning, you know, it's like ringing a restaurant at 1 o'clock to make, you know, a booking when it's the middle of their lunch rush hour. So just put yourself in their shoes for a second and do a little bit of homework to figure out when's the best time, because they're going to be less grumpy and more likely to listen to what you're going on about. But he did say media releases are still being used. Yep. I know that they are still being used, but he gets a hell of a lot of emails. So in the subject line of the email is where you're going to get his attention. Now, we know from research our attention span is dwindling, so we need to get their attention. What advice do you give Andrea Rowe on the subject line?
Look, I keep it very local if there's a geographic feature, if there's a current newsworthy issue that's happening in the press anyway. So let's say we're talking about your price of wool, or we're talking about some stats on mental illness or mental health or something like that. So bring in something like that. And the other one is a very specific call to action. So it might be something like Morning to Peninsula, a clothing store, achieves Chinese, backers or something like that. Yeah, so it's being very, very short and specific.
Yeah, I get a lot of requests from particularly PR agencies like yourself, Linda, for this show. And I must admit, because I'm not a journalist, but I must admit, just human nature, what's going to attract my attention? If I see in the subject line world first, that's going to get my attention. Mm-hmm. Linda, what do you advise clients?
I think most of the time with a headline, we've got 3 seconds. That's statistically, we've got 3 seconds. Yeah. So we need to have why and read me. Mm. That's what your headline needs to say, regardless of what you're sending. So from our point of view, if you're launching a book, why was the book written? If you ask, wanting to promote a cause or something, why are we doing it? And what is the benefit to the reader or the audience of the publication you're sending it to? That's what needs to be in your subject line.
Mm. And particularly too for not-for-profits, PR and the subject line can really help message that, how something is changing a life, saving a life or improving a life. Yeah, so just put that very, very short and sharp.
So a little bit of drama.
Yes.
A little bit of drama. Mm-hmm. In drama. There it works. Do embargoes still work? I'll just explain for the listeners not knowing what an embargo is. On a media release, you might send out and say, look, it's embargoed until 12 noon tomorrow, which means that the media have to actually treat it confidentially and not report on it.
Look, for members of parliament, it still is used and still is respected. I can't comment as much on small business, but certainly for government it
is. Why is it used? Why don't they just release it when they release it? Why do they have to have an embargo?
Sometimes, well, particularly from my background with Victorian government, sometimes it's involving a couple of agencies that have worked on a major announcement together. There might be some sensitivities, some cultural sensitivities as well. So it's usually recognising that there's a couple of players involved. Also a couple of different members of parliament involved as well. But that's only my experience from government.
Look, from a small business point of view, we've got so much technology in our hands now that embargo is not really necessary. I get it when you've got multiple departments or you've got a particular time frame that the press campaign is going to be at 2 o'clock that day and you want to give a bit of advance notice. But if you're a small business owner, you can draft and hit send from your email anywhere pretty much as long as you've got internet reception. So I don't think I don't advise for it. I've never really been a huge fan of it anyway. So
okay, so let's not do embargoes. With the small business, Linda, have you found a growth that a lot more small business people are now engaging specialists like yourself and Andrea Rowe as well?
Yep.
Or do you find that they feel that they're doing it themselves because of social media and all that sort of stuff? They can just press a button and do it.
There are lots of business owners doing it themselves, and I, by all means, encourage them to do it in a lot of ways through media connections, and we just want to provide them with the tools and that and the bits of help to allow them to know how the cycle works. From the point of view of is it an increase, we most probably knock back 2 to 3 clients a week because it's not the right fit for us, or we can't, we've got to be excited about the client too.
Do you mean that's like, you know, clients will say, oh, I've got this awesome and it's awesome and it's awesome,
and they want sales
and they want sales but they're actually not awesome.
Yeah.
So they're a bit sort of in their own little world, little bubble, and they've obviously got people around them telling them it's great, and I know I've been dealing in my business world with clients, and I'll ask them a question in a workshop or something about competitors, and it scares me, and I hear it far too often. They don't have any. I say, who are your competitors? I don't have any. And I said, what do you mean? They said, because no one does it how we do it. And I said, but you're not looking at it from the customer's perspective.
Yeah. The customer's still going to look at multiple people.
Exactly. Right. Of course they are. Yeah. And I think the thing too is in terms of businesses actually pitching themselves as I've got the awesome story to tell, PR professionals really actually want to be connected with a product or a client that is obviously going to have some success, you know. So we do sort of look selectively and sometimes and ask those questions as well.
What's your view on advising clients to become a subject matter expert or a thought leader in their field? Is that something that you advise clients to do?
Look, I still think they can, but they have to have the backbone to back it up.
Yeah, okay.
Because if you get caught not knowing your stuff, and it's knowing your key message, and quite often where we see business owners fail is that they don't know what their key message is to begin with.
Does blogging link? It's the word blogging. And then also, and content all sits to seem within, fit within the realm of PR.
And digital influencers as well.
So, and copywriting.
Absolutely. Yes. Certainly for me, I work with a lot of not-for-profits and we do a lot of outreach programs with digital influencers. So it's about looking at who are bloggers out there who stand for certain things, who have a following that really matches our not-for-profit agencies or the business that I'm working with that might have a not-for-profit story. So certainly bloggers are a terrific way of extending your story and having an impactful campaign.
Andrea Rowe from Your Coastal Connection, thank you for coming on Taking Care of Business and imparting your deep knowledge. I love having you
always
on.
Always enjoyable.
Linda Reed, Evanup, lovely to finally meet you. And I've been following your work with great interest, and I wish you all the very best for success. Thanks for making the effort to come down to Taking Care of Business. I know you had quite a journey today.
Well done.
Also, I'd like to thank our own media guru, Tracy Hutchinson, who's got a show, Wordy Rapping Hood, right after this show. So stay tuned for that. Also, I'd like to thank a big thank you to Peter Taylor, the business editor of the Herald Sun. He gave us some great tips. We hope you've learned something new today and you feel inspired. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook. We look forward to your company next Friday at 11 a.m. In the meantime, keep taking care of your business.